The Seahawks keep proving everyone wrong. The NFL playoffs now go through New Orleans. Nick Foles does it again, and everyone loves the Colts. We are just full of the Christmas spirit on the Week 16 edition of the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I almost tripped up on that, but I made it through. I remembered the title of our show. It is the very special Christmas episode, and if you listen until the end, I think you will understand the true meaning of Christmas. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. We are through Week 16 Sunday, and let's face it, Broncos-Raiders, no one really is too invested in that game, so kind of through the meaningful part of Week 16.
No, wait, back up there. I have full plans to watch every snap of that game because my family shifted the big Christmas event to Christmas Eve afternoon due to many conflicting scheduling issues, and not mine, because I would certainly prefer regular Christmas schedule. So I will be home at Christmas Eve, treating it as a regular work night, watching a sad Monday Night Football game, probably by myself as I think about, oh gosh. I'm looking forward to that game.
Like you'll be alone, or as in you will be the only person on the planet watching that game? I don't know if the broadcast team's going to show up.
It'd be one and the same.
Let's start with the Sunday slate here and what went down this weekend. We're going to touch on the Saturday games too toward the end of the show, since you probably have heard plenty about those. But starting on Sunday night, the Seahawks get it done at home against the Chiefs here. This was, you'll see the final score, and you know, 38-31, that's kind of a lot of points, but Seahawks got a lead in this one, and they kind of maintained it. You know, they were up 14-10 at halftime, and they didn't trail again in this one. This was sort of their style of football here.
And we talked about that on Thursday, whether they can take the air out of the ball and dominate time of possession and keep Mahomes off the field and win that way. And I would say to a certain degree they did. But the other thing we talked about on Thursday is ultimately when you're a run-first offense, unless you're going to let your quarterback run double-digit times a game like the Ravens do or like the Panthers do, if you're not going to do that, then you're only as good as the passing game you build off of your running game. And the biggest difference in this game to me, Gary, were the plays Russell Wilson made, and they weren't all just pass plays built off of. They wasn't all play action or whatever. Some of it was just great quarterbacking. I came away from this thing like, ah, these stupid Chiefs. I'm not picking them for anything in the playoffs. This defense is one of the worst in the league. But then the more I thought about it, what are those guys supposed to do? What are the backup cornerbacks supposed to do? Russell Wilson made some indefensible throws down the stretch, and I thought that was the Chris Carson was great. That set it up. But Wilson's throws in the second half, that was the difference in the game.
Yeah, I mean, I thought there were a couple opportunities in sort of the meat of this game, second quarter, third quarter, where the Chiefs had a chance to get off the field. And look, Charvarius Ward and Tremont Smith especially, they had a rough time out there. I mean, those are backup players who couldn't match up with what the Seahawks had at wide receiver tonight. But the Chiefs couldn't end drives when they had an opportunity to end drives. And then by the end of the game, it was, you know, even if the defense was, like you said, they were playing a little bit better, but Russell Wilson just made too many plays down the stretch.
And the question now becomes, can he do that against a quality defense? Because Kansas City, aside from Chris Jones and sometimes, most times, Justin Houston, they don't have a lot that threatens you defensively. Eric Berry's great, but a safety can only threaten you so much. So it's a lot of reactionary players on that Chiefs defense. Can Russell Wilson be counted on to make the kind of magic he made tonight when they're facing these teams in the NFC playoffs? The Vikings type, and they're not going to play them in the first round, but a Vikings type of defense, a Dallas defense, for example, the Bears defense, if they see them in the first round, very different than the Chiefs. Let's not forget, they do have, even though I thought some guys who were overmatched played decently tonight, those cornerbacks you mentioned, they played decent and still got beat, and there were snaps where they just flat out got beat. The Chiefs still have a bad defense. There's no two ways to put it.
Can I tell you one play that I thought was completely backbreaking for the Chiefs? Was that Ed Dixon third and long catch and run that wasn't even a very impressive catch and run? He sort of just, I think it was Tremont Smith first, just gave a really feeble arm tackle around his ankles, and then Reggie Ragland sort of gave him the old 8-yard tackle. That was a that was not a very gifted ball carrier who did not run very well on that play, and he turned that into like a 10-yard run after the catch.
Yeah, that was I agree. It was a really illustrative play of how they of how this game went. I agree with you on that. Hey, by the way, and they did not mention it on the broadcast, and it drove me nuts, and I didn't Google it because you know I watch these on DVR, but where in the hell was Orlando Scandrick tonight?
I do not know, but I will Google it right
well,
now.
Well, I'm looking it up now, and I guess he was standing on the sideline in a jacket. Orlando Scandrick's had a decent season, which is a lot more than I thought we'd say of him. He was on the roster bubble and ultimately didn't make it in Washington. And he's been, I think, an okay number three corner with Fuller out of the lineup. It was bizarre that he wasn't out there. I don't know if he was on the injury report, but they didn't make any mention of it in the broadcast. And the whole night, it was just absolutely driving me crazy.
Sounds like he was just benched.
That's what I can tell. I wish I texted his agent now that I think about it. His agent always is one of those immediate text back guys, which I love that.
Yeah.
I love people that. But Chiefs have to, if they're going to go anywhere with their defense in the playoffs, it's going to be on the strength of their pass rush dictating the game. They cannot let their back seven be reactionary in coverage. They have to win with penetration and big plays. In other words, it all comes down to Chris Jones, who's by far the biggest Pro Bowl snub this year, by the way.
Yeah, no, I'll go with you on that. Yeah, Scandrick and Ron Parker just sounds like it was a flat-out benching. They sort of threw a Hail Mary, saw if, you know, check and see if they had anything going with these young guys. Didn't really work out.
Wonder if something's up there. That's an awfully weird time of year to be benching guys.
Frank Clark kind of had his way with Eric Fisher too.
He did. Fisher's had a nice season. Frank Clark he didn't make the Pro Bowl either, did he? Was Frank Clark on the Pro Bowl roster? We have to check.
I'll be honest, Andy.
I don't need.
Yeah, I realize I should, because there are guys who have contract incentives in there, and it means something to those guys, and I should be upset for the guys who get snubbed. But I just, since I don't really watch the game, and because All Pro is a little more meaningful, I usually don't bother checking who made the Pro Bowl roster.
All right, well, we will check on that and get back. We ought to probably know that, at least if we're going to talk about these guys. And there are people listening to the show right now who are going nuts.
We'll talk about it
Thursday. How can you not know that? But I'm with you as well. I think about All Pro stuff a lot. Pro Bowl, I've learned to just not think about it. It looks like he was not on the roster here. But Frank Clark might have the best immediate quickness of anybody in the NFL. Just if we're talking the first nanosecond of a play, Frank Clark's quickness, it's the first nanosecond, and then it's late in his second step where he gets quick again, which is why he's so good on redirect moves inside and outside. He is a really tremendous talent. He's going to be interesting to see if they give him a long-term contract. The other guy like that, of course, and he wasn't very active in this game tonight, but he's had a nice season, is D. Ford. It'll be interesting to see. Mm-hmm. I imagine he will get franchise tagged.
Yeah.
But those are two guys with startling quickness who are usually productive, but they're just not quite productive enough that you wonder why aren't they the best players in the NFL when you see them at their best.
Yeah. Well, this was a solid win for the Chiefs. They are in the postseason. We will do our best to sort of recap the postseason as we go along here, but they are in. Right? They clinched tonight, right?
Of course. Yep. They are in the playoffs, and that's
Wild
a good
card.
Deal for them. That's a hell of a season for them, because I don't think any of us thought, I didn't think it. I didn't think they'd be even in close to contention this year. They've done a really nice job. The two teams that have rebuilt on the fly and have been so much better than we thought are the Seahawks and then the Indianapolis Colts, who we'll see next Sunday night.
There's a Twitter board somewhere out there that has my preseason quote on how the Seahawks are going to stick around this year.
Oh, humble brag. Why don't you just
That's
say
all.
I
it's not a humble brag, it's just a brag.
Yeah. All right, by the way, the NFC defensive ends in the Pro Bowl this year were Cam Jordan, DeMarcus Lawrence, and Danielle Hunter. It's hard to wedge Clark into that conversation.
Yeah.
And the D tackles loaded. Donald, Fletcher Cox, Akeem Hicks. So there wasn't a spot, I guess. And they got Mack as an outside linebacker. I was wondering where he was. So there just wasn't a spot for Clark. Sometimes that happens.
Fair enough. We'll let it go for now. Really quick note before we move on here. First of all, a Merry Christmas to those of you who celebrate, unless it's already past Christmas, and I hope you had a great Christmas in that case. We actually, usually we have like a couple notes about how shows are shuffling around because people are going on vacation and we didn't know if people would listen and stuff like that. It's just a regular lineup this week for the MMQB podcast. I think Albert Breer is solo. I think no Jenny Bretis and Connor Orr. I think he's doing solo shows. But other than that, I think it's the same you'll always get. You'll get Albert on Wednesday. You'll get Andy and I with the Deep Dive Show on Thursday. You'll get the Gambling Podcast on Friday. It will be the same deal next week when New Year's happens and all that. Maybe Albert was going to do like an impression of Jenny and Connor on a show to try and fool people, and I just spoiled the whole thing, but...
Well, and if you're wondering, because it's going to sound like Albert Breer alone on Christmas Day, he has a very wonderful young family back at home. So no need to shed tears for him when you hear him by himself in the studio on Christmas recording his podcast.
Quote, you look at the fact that they still have Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright. How much can they really fall off when they have those two guys on the field?
I remember you saying that.
That was June 28th.
If this were like a trial, though, that would not be omitted as evidence because Wright has only played in like 3.5 of the games this year.
That's fair enough.
They'd get thrown out. But it's nice. I remember you saying that. I remember you. I kind of remember feeling like you'd lifted that from me, though.
Why?
Because I had said something like that as well.
I don't know.
Those linebackers are the key to that defense. Although, the last thing, and I know we're moving on to Steelers Saints here. The guy who was the key to the defense tonight, I can't wait to see how he plays next week, because where in the world did he come from was Akeem King.
Their
defensive back on Travis Kelce. I mean, he's been in there on some dime stuff, but where did that come from tonight? He was the player
no
of the game.
Idea. He played the game of his life. I have no idea. Yeah. That was a shocker. And I did, by the way, if I could just do one more plug for the gambling podcast, I was having a preseason conversation with everyone who does some sort of gambling contribution in the SI offices, Ben Teitelbaum, who hosts The Line, and my brother Scott Gramling, who does all sorts of handicapping stuff. They were all over under 7 wins for the Seahawks this year, and I told them, I wouldn't be too thrilled about that one. I'm very smart, Andy, is my point.
You did a nice job. Do your job here, host. Get to the next game.
Let's go Saints-Steelers. And I want to start this one off with a bit of an apology to Saints fans, because I think we're going to shortchange your team. The Saints clinched the number one seed in the NFC. We will be talking about that a ton over the next month, and there's a good chance we'll be talking about them into February, because they are just really, really tough at home, and this was a look. This has been a huge season for them. We have to talk the Steelers in this one, though. This was another game for them where they had a handful of situational mistakes. Whether it was Stephen Ridley losing a fumble on a 3rd-and-2 when they were in field goal range in the fourth quarter and protecting a lead, whether it was the fake punt that came up short in the fourth quarter, which I only didn't mind because if you're going to give the ball back to Drew Brees for a potential game-winning drive, I guess it's nice to have it maybe be a slightly shorter field so you can, as the Steelers, get the ball back one more time. Steelers defense was really strong in this game, but, the fake punt didn't work out, but I didn't think it was as big a risk as it was portrayed as. But the officiating was problematic in this game. The fourth down pass interference calls to me I think that this game might be the tipping point for defensive pass interference becoming reviewable, or at least becoming reviewable above a certain distance.
Talking about the Joe Hayden one in the end zone on Alvin Kamara.
Yep.
Yeah, I got a foul in AAU basketball once, by the way, very similar to that, where I reached out and touched the guy. And I was a passive player, so I was only reaching out to touch to look like I was doing something. Really, I was embarrassed that he'd broken away on me. And then I feigned arguing with the referee, and, oh, come on. I think I said I was just trying to trick him, which I don't know what the hell that even – I was trying to trick him by touching him in the back.
Doesn't make any sense.
No, I know, but I wanted to look like I was engaged in the game. I was one of those three-point camper kids. I was, and I hit a few, and I get hot. But please don't make me be in there and be aggressive. So I feel for Joe Haden on that because I have been in that situation that he was in. The one that I think is worth really talking about was that last one. That's a little bit blurrier on the final drive where he had the stop. I think it was on Michael Thomas, was it?
Mm-hmm.
And did you like – were you okay with that call?
No. No. I was not okay with that call. I thought that was – I mean, the first one was egregious, and it was brutal. The second one was the kind of call where we're probably not discussing it. We're definitely not discussing it. It happens in the second quarter of the game, and we just sort of chalk it up to, you know, there's a slight the contact was not significant. He didn't wrap the arm around. He didn't move Thomas. I thought it was actually a great defensive play. I thought that was played as well as it could have been played. I thought it was a terrible flag.
I don't think I disagree with you. If they do flag it, I thought it was more defensive holding than pass interference. The contact seemed to happen early in the down off the snap, which is how you have to play Michael Thomas, by the way. So I think I'm with you on that one. That was an enormous call, but then the Steelers had some breakdowns in their zone coverages that were leading up to that and after that. And, you know, it's not like this game was, at least in that moment, we're just talking final drive. It's not like the game was stolen from them. They still had their opportunities. The other thing that was interesting is when they got the ball back, Roethlisberger went deep to their rookie wide receiver, Washington, James Washington, who's had, quite frankly, has had a miserable, horrible rookie year. And Romo did a great job of showing the All-22 coaches film, explained that they're doubling, dedicated doubles on Smith-Schuster and a dedicated double on Michael Antonio Brown. So that's where you have to go. But I thought it was interesting that they went 2 out of 3 times deep to Washington there. Didn't wind up hurting him, I guess, because Smith-Schuster still put him in position before taking it away on the fumble. But a fragmented final drive, I guess, I felt. It felt almost desperate from the Steelers, and
yes,
it kind of ended in a desperate feel. Well, I don't think they need to play that way.
They needed that fourth down.
Right,
the
I'm sorry,
down
go
conversion
ahead.
To Antonio Brown.
Right.
Just keep it going, 4th and 15.
The Saints had never felt desperate watching Breeze run it. It just felt like, all right, here we go, and we're now oiling the machine, and we're going to operate, and let's go. The Steelers, It felt like we just need someone to make a play.
Yeah, and again, I don't like focusing this much on the officiating because it does sound like I'm saying the Saints didn't deserve this game or something like that. Saints deserve this game. Just both teams deserve better officiating in this game, so we wouldn't have to talk about it. There's one more thing I just want to mention on that first pass interference, the one that was again, that's a fourth down call. It's so it goes from a turnover on downs to a 33-yard penalty that puts the ball on the 1-yard line. That's as close as you can get to just giving a team 7 points from an officiating standpoint. But the biggest tell on that call is Alvin Kamara. You know, guys, every play, they turn around gesturing, give me a flag. So Alvin Kamara had no instinct to look for a flag, to call for a flag, to do anything involving protesting for a pass interference call there, because it didn't exist. It just
right.
It was bad. It was bad. And again, it looked Stephen Ridley blast from the past for most of us had ball security issues back when he was with the Patriots. I don't know. I guess the Steelers just could have used a star veteran running back they could have used in that instance right there. But Colts, Giants, Indianapolis Colts, Andy. Can you believe we come this far? They're in a playoff game. They're the Sunday night flex game. They are a playoff game next week.
I'm in love with this team. I'm absolutely in love with them, and I think it's been as good of a coaching job on both sides of the ball, as complete of a coaching display as any team in the NFL has presented this season. I mean, let's not forget, I think a lot of people thought this was about a 3-5-1 team entering the year, and here they are having won 9 of their last 10 games to be in, as you said, this is de facto playoff game.
It is, and I should mention real quick, so the Steelers are a half game out here. Steelers basically are aiming for the division title in the AFC North. They have to win, they have to beat the Bengals, and then the Browns need to beat the Ravens in Baltimore for the Steelers to get in. But the Steelers can also get in if they win and the Colts and the Titans tie.
Okay.
So they maybe will have something to root for Sunday night anyway, rooting for a tie.
I'll tell you this. I would love that. And wouldn't that be the most exciting,
it would be awesome
ending? Yeah, that would be cool. But let's talk about this Colts defense. We talk about Matt Eberflus each week. This and the job he's done as their D coordinator. Last week they came out and they did a bunch of blitzes against Dak Prescott, which is uncharacteristic for the Colts, but really a good illustration of how their scheme has expanded, how these guys are more comfortable in the scheme. They're adding these fairly large wrinkles to it now. This week it was back to a little bit more traditional Colts football, keep the action in front of us. My guess is that's because they were facing a veteran QB like Eli Manning. Mm-hmm. Say what you want about Manning, and he's not great with bodies around him, but he does identify your blitzes. He knows what you're doing, and so they were going to make him execute differently. And I don't think the defense was overly outstanding. I mean, I don't think it was outstanding at all. I don't think it was overly impressive in this game, and it came back down to riding that superstar quarterback that they have. If Mahomes and Breeze weren't having such great, and really it's Mahomes, I guess it's both of them. I'm just surprised Andrew Luck isn't more prominent in the playoff or the MVP conversation.
Yeah, I mean, look, if Luck had the season a year ago, I think we'd be talking about a neck-and-neck race with Tom Brady for MVP, but this year, and you know, I think we probably handicap the same way. I think it's Mahomes, you know, probably with a half-length lead ahead of Drew Brees going into Week 17, and we'll see what happens here. This was, and not to back up about a game we already talked about, but that was another game where, you know, Chiefs were getting beat, and Mahomes just made a lot of plays that that guys can't make. But yeah, Andrew Luck, they were, this offense was incredibly efficient in the second half. They had 4 drives, they scored 3 touchdowns. Even the one where they didn't score a touchdown, they ended up punting and pinning the Giants back to set up 3 and out, and then getting the ball back for the winning score. Just a really impressive half of football.
He's so good on downfield precision accuracy. And which is why he's always been so great at extending those plays, but now he's running the game at the line of scrimmage. We've seen that more. They had some stuff out of spread empty at times. It's just a really well-orchestrated offense, great combination of QB and coach, each giving and taking some to work with the other to make Luck a more efficient and proficient quarterback in this system. And in this game, we saw the Giants D, and kind of the story, not the story of the Giants season, but an issue that has plagued the Giants, who have actually been a pretty good looking defense down the stretch, given all the injuries that they have. You wouldn't know they're a good looking defense because they don't look good in the fourth quarter of games. They wear down, and they wore down again in this game, and the Colts got the better of it. And that's probably all for the best, because that gives us a little bit more of a playoff implications for week 17.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go out west here. The Chicago Bears beat the 49ers, snapped that 49ers winning streak. Let's talk about Mitchell Trubisky in this one, Andy, because he had a couple of ugly plays in the first half. He had a little bit of a, I don't know what you call it, it was a scramble, and then during the scramble he threw a swing pass that was a lateral into traffic, turned into a turnover, and look, you have to go out of your way to turn the ball over against the 49ers, what we've learned this season. And also, he had a red zone interception, and there was a holding call on the play away from the ball. I am assuming Trubisky did not see that flag, considering his reaction after the play as he started to leave the field and then got someone back on and all that stuff. But it was another really ugly red zone interception where he extended the play and just threw to, I don't know what he was throwing to. He just threw to a defender. But
K'Wan Williams. That's the guy. He was wide open. K'Wan Williams, Niners slot corner. That would have been – you mentioned the Niners. I didn't realize they have not had a turnover on defense since October 7th.
Can I give you the stat here, Andy? since they started tracking turnover stats in 1960, there has never in the history of the NFL been a team only have single-digit takeaways in a season, and that includes the 1982 season where they only played 9 games that season. So 11 was the all-time low, a handful of teams there. 7 this year for the 49ers. They have 7 takeaways.
That's what happens when you're a zone defense without a pass rush.
No pass rush,
yep. Because zones break down. And the zones only work if you do. That's what we always say. You need a 4-man rush to have a zone defense, to play cover 3, to play cover 2. With Robert Saleh, it's a lot of cover 3. You need that 4-man rush because otherwise your zones break down. You don't get turnovers, don't get guys around the ball. But even then, you'd think there would have been a lucky bounce of the ball.
Yeah.
You would think someone would have done what Trubisky did today and thrown it right to him on a play. Or that play you mentioned, it was a triple option. It was a design to be pitched, but the timing got messed up. And so Trubisky wound up throwing it instead of pitching it because there were bodies around him. Now it was a bad play. You'd think something like that would happen a little more often. Or DeForest Buckner's got a very quiet 12.5 sacks. He has not had the season I thought he'd have. But you'd think with his long arms, he'd bump the ball once or twice. It's almost unfathomable that they wouldn't have more turnovers, even though they're not a great defense.
They've got to have 4 next week to avoid history here. But back to Trubisky real quick. I thought he was very impressive in the second half. Granted, this is not a world-beating defense, as we just talked about, but I thought he was sharp in the second half. He looked decisive. He was accurate. His ball placement was good. That has been a huge issue for him this season. I thought the second half was encouraging after a bit of a discouraging first half.
I thought he dropped back and just dumped it off underneath against cover 4 linebackers, cover 3 linebackers again and again. And Jordan Howard ran the ball on inside zone and moved it, and it was a methodical, easy dink and dunk half. So if that's encouraging to you, that's, and look, maybe that's enough. With their defense in Chicago and today in this game, it was enough. But I thought Nick Mullins had the better second half. If we're comparing, if I had to pick a QB to build around based on this game and those second halves, even though Nick Mullins had some bonehead plays on the final drive that hurt, I want to mold what Mullins is showing, where there's that toughness late in the down and there's a really consistent, decisive, on-schedule quarterbacking feel early in the down. Trubisky, it felt like they hit him a little bit in the second half, and I don't blame him given the way the game was flowing.
Yeah, Nick Mullins is going to be in the league for a while. And I appreciate his, C.J. Beathard sort of gave the same vibe at times where these guys are kind of playing like they might never start another game because, frankly, they might not start a game for a really long time or perhaps even ever again.
Beathard looked like an effort guy, though. Mullins looks like a professional quarterback. Beathard's out there, and you root for him. Nick Mullins, you go, oh, wow, we can run our offense with him. He's good. I mean, he's not great, but he is. He might be one day. He plays the way a quarterback is. You want him to play in the NFL, and I'm sure Kyle Shanahan will want him around long term.
Even with those physical tools, though, I mean, I don't look at him and see a starter. I see a mid-level backup.
Well, he's been starting these last few weeks, and the Niners have been a respectably competitive offense without having a lot around him.
All right. I will say the last play of this game for the 49ers was sad.
Really bad. It was very bad. Yep. He's got to scramble on that, but he'll learn that. And look, I mean, you know how I am. I'll take the throw over the run. Even I yelled, watching as I take notes by myself in a dark room of these games, run, because I want to see the game keep going. And he didn't, and yeah, that was a bad last play.
It just, it's not just that he threw it, it's just that he threw it, and it landed like 16 yards wide of the sideline. Like, it was nowhere near being catchable. It was just,
I thought the most impressive thing on the play was that the cheerleaders didn't scurry away when the ball landed. They stood there and kept their poses. They kept their poise and their posture. A lot of lesser cheerleading squads would have scampered and taken cover.
That is true, although perhaps they've just never seen a ball come to that area of the field. It's a possibility, Andy.
Some of those Beathard throws probably made it over there at some point.
Well, this is 49ers have some stuff to build with next year. Obviously, as soon as Garoppolo went down, it was all about what they were going to be going forward. But look, they've been competitive. They won two straight, and they were certainly in this game. The final ended up being 14-9. Bears go on the road and get one. Let's go to more Nick Foles mania.
Yeah,
he did
it
again.
Do you want this to continue? I know. Do you want the Eagles to get in the playoffs? Because this Nick Foles narrative has really taken hold. It's incredible it didn't take hold by this time. Well, not by this time, but by the end of last year, the Super Bowl, it kind of did. But not like now, where it's like, well, Nick Foles is in. We've got a shot. Our superstar future all-world QB, Carson Wentz, is out. And our journeyman backup is in. And now magic is ensuing. I haven't seen a narrative just sweep up with this much momentum in a long time.
Yeah, perhaps Tim Tebow. Yeah, this is look, the Eagles are fun. I'll say that. If I had to choose between watching an Eagles game and a Vikings game, I think my heart would choose the Eagles, even though I would like to see the Vikings be successful. And the Eagles already got their rings last year, so you know, why be greedy? Let someone else win it this year. But this Eagles team is it's fun. It's fun to pretend that this is there's some magical momentum behind them. And look, the funny part about Foles is if Foles played at the end of this year the way he played at the end of last year's regular season, I mean, they would have, you know, they probably wouldn't have won in L.A. and they would have lost this game by like two or three touchdowns, and you know, we wouldn't be talking about them anymore.
Nick Foles, what he's done, what's so baffling about it, he is not at all programmed. If you look at his body mechanics and the way he makes decisions, he's a very methodical, slow twitch, long levered QB, which is why a lot of people think he's better out of shotgun than he is under center, because you remove some of the mechanics in shotgun, and when you're methodical and long levered, mechanics are not always your friend. So you'd think Nick Foles on third and fourth down, a guy like that, just you wouldn't think that's a world beater in obvious passing situations where you're getting blitzes and disguises and the game has to go both fast and slow for you mentally. On third and fourth down today, he was 15 out of 16 for 193 yards and three touchdowns. And that's what he did last year down the stretch. He made plays on third and long.
This was – I'll tell you why I'm getting swept up in Nick Foles. There's one play on the final drive, a third and 10 from their 11-yard line, where he had to stand in and make a throw with Jadeveon Clowney having a free run and basically just at full speed crown of the helmet into Foles' sternum. And he ended up connecting downfield with Alshon Jeffrey made a great catch on the other end. But and then they flash back to Foles because it's one of those things we were watching the broadcast, you know, the – you see Foles is perhaps being murdered in front of your eyes and the ball flies downfield and you're not sure what happened to him. Then they next time you see Foles, he is just lying on his back, sort of clutching his chest in pain. And it's kind of like, oh, that's it. Just like my reaction was, should I call someone? Should I let someone know this just happened and Nick Foles needs help? Because I don't know if they're helping him fast enough. There should be medical professionals on the field right now.
He takes hits. He'll do that. He's been – that is always something he's been willing to do. I noticed that – not like this. I mean, this Clowney hits his own kind of deal. But he when I first went to NFL Films, this is one of the first things I learned from Greg Cosell and Ron Jaworski. And maybe it's a little bit because Jaws was this kind of QB, I guess, back in his day. But they call it the ability to stare down the gun barrel. In other words, to stand firm and make throws as defenders mm-hmm. are looming in. That's what I was kind of trying to talk about with Nick Mullins back
yeah.
there. He's
oh,
got
he does that
ability. He
yep.
does absolutely does that. Not everybody does that. Blaine Gabbert, if you ever mm-hmm. wondered why is Blaine Gabbert? It's not that Blaine Gabbert, I don't mean to pick on because I know he won the game and then he did a great job. He's done a good job off the bench this year
yes.
in Tennessee. He's a respectable backup QB, but he was a top 10 draft pick. He's supposed to be a respectable franchise QB, and he never became that. If you're ever wondering why, it's not because he can't throw or read defenses. He can. It's because he never had any semblance of that ability to stare down the gun barrel. If he felt pressure, he moved and reacted, sometimes even if there wasn't pressure. That ability to stand in there and be firm, that's how a Nick Foles can have a better career than a super talented guy like a Blaine Gabbert.
Foles also had to make another big third down throw, third and 10, to put them into field goal range to Zach Ertz. Ertz had a big day. We talked about last week with their be a little more of an Alshon Jeffrey slant to this offense. Ertz had a monster day, 12 for 110 and two touchdowns. You had Darren Sproles making plays, which is always fun. All those guys, all your favorite Eagles from last year's team made plays in this one, except for Carson Wentz.
Is there any reason at all to vote for someone other than Zach Ertz as a tight end for the All-Pro team? Who else would it be? Is Travis Kelce still in contention? Is George Kittle the Kelce, takes me a long time to go through my notes on these guys, so I'd love to eliminate them if I can and just say Ertz, but I don't want to shortchange anybody.
I think it's Ertz versus Kelce. I think there's a case to be made for Kelce, but I think those are the two. Okay. And I think Kittle's on that second tier with Rob Gronkowski, the declining Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah, don't get me mad. We're going to get the Patriots Bills here in a second, though.
One more note on this game. Actually, two more notes. Demaryius Thomas sounds like a ruptured Achilles. He is going to be out, and let's talk about that real quick. But I do want to mention real quick, Deshaun Watson was spectacular in this game. This is going to be one of the greatest performances that no one will ever note or acknowledge or talk about. He brought them back with two touchdown drives in the final 6 minutes, just throwing to basically DeAndre Hopkins and then a bunch of guys who are probably playing pickup ball at the Y otherwise, if we could stick with today's pickup basketball theme to the show. But
that was a sanctioned AAU game that I got.
Oh, it was. That's
how it was officiated. And no one would call that in a pickup game. Give me some credit. I played organized sports as a kid, but go on. I know you play pickup basketball, though.
I play organized basketball. I play Basketball City. That's Rec
League.
You get a trophy and everything if you win it.
I forgot about the trophy.
He connected with Vincent Smith, who I really was not familiar with, to the point where I misspelled his name. It's with a Y, V-Y-N-C-I-N-T, yeah. Vincent Smith from Limestone College. Really nice throw and great catch by Smith, what looked like the winning touchdown until, Foles brought it back. Elliott kicked the game-winning field goal. But this Texans team, they're bad in the secondary. They're just flat out bad. And I don't know if they have enough, especially with Thomas out. Basically, you are down to one playmaker for Deshaun Watson to use in this offense. This just, I don't want to sit here and talk like there is, you know, they're going to go into January and lose a wild card game 70 to nothing. But I find it very difficult to picture them winning a postseason game.
They're going to have to hide their secondary, and for the longest time, their defense has been built, actually, even though it's J.J. Watt headlining it, in some regard, you could say their defense has been built around their secondary because they've been so good in matchup zone coverages. That's why they've been so creative with their pass rushes. They trust guys to match up and win out of zone and at times just out of straight man-to-man. I don't think they can play that way if the secondary is as decimated as it appears. So, yes, I'm with you on that.
They have not quite clinched the AFC South, by the way. Would have to win next week, or I think they lose and the Titans win. The Texans still win the AFC South. They are in the playoffs regardless. They have that spot. But this is a team in some trouble heading into January after a nice season. Cowboys-Bucks. This was a game. The Cowboys won it the way they win games, and the Bucks lost it the way they lose games. The Bucks just kept on moving to scoring territory and either, you know, getting a bunch of penalties and punting or kicking field goals, just not putting up enough points to win a game on the road in Dallas. More of a bend-don't-break type of performance by the Cowboys, but they are your NFC East champions. All this talk of Nick Foles. Cowboys clinched the NFC East today.
Yeah, congratulations to them. Should a coach be fired if his offense underachieved because they kept fumbling the ball and scoring position, which the Bucks this year have done more than any team I've ever seen in my life? Is that a reflection on a coach or not?
I don't know. It's
I don't see how you could say it is.
We
this
had
is professional
this
football. I mean, Dirk Cutter's not teaching these guys to hold the ball. That's what you do. That's what you do when the guys are 6 to 8 years old. You blame their peewee coaches for this.
We kind of had this conversation a couple years ago when Mike McCoy was coaching the Chargers, and they just find these bizarre ways. You know, Holder drops a field goal attempt, or you know, a guy on a clock killing drive just sort of forgets he's carrying a football and stuff like that. I don't know. I like, maybe it comes down to some level of culture. Does there have to be more of a strict? I don't know. Hold on to the ball,
I
guys.
I don't know.
I honestly don't know. But it when it just keeps on happening, it's tough to look the other way. I mean, this team has been just exceptionally reckless with the ball this season.
Yeah, and it starts not that Jameis Winston's the one doing all these turnovers, but it starts at the quarterback. We talk all the time with Winston, he's going to have 4 or 5 near turnovers a game, and it's a matter of whether the defense catches the passes or doesn't that will show up in how his game looks. So there's a looseness overall to the team that probably doesn't reflect well on a coach. But my goodness, they've gone up and down the field all season long. They're putting up huge numbers. Their system is working. They've done it with quarterbacks that they don't fully trust, and yet the system's working. They've been changing QBs back and forth, Fitz or Jameis, and yet they don't have anything to show for it because of simple things like fumbling, which statistics show tend to be a finicky stat from 1 year to the next. They could set the record for ball security next year. I mean, that's likelier than them fumbling as much next year. Is it likelier or more likely? Which one, Mr. Editor, which is it?
I usually say more likely. I guess either is acceptable. I think likelier is now part of the language for you millennials.
Helpful.
Yeah. There you do either. Do what your heart tells you. But no, it's not just the fumble or the pure volume. It's where they're coming on the field. Which is typically when most teams are scoring points. The Bucs are giving the ball back to the other team. But this was, look, Cowboys probably have some things to straighten out offensively after another underwhelming week. But if they go somewhere in January, it's going to be the defense. And I think when I look at this NFC picture and I wonder who could go into New Orleans and win a game, and obviously the Cowboys beat the Saints at home earlier this season, I feel like the Cowboys have the best shot of going into New Orleans and winning.
Probably because you saw them do that. Not
yes.
in New Orleans, but
Not
you saw
New
them
Orleans.
Do that.
Yeah. Let's go Rams-Cardinals. Rams get, I guess you'd say, back on track to an extent. No Todd Gurley in this one, so they went with C.J. Anderson, who just got there. I don't know, he might have just showed up at the field on Sunday, and they were like, hey, you want to head out there, play some football? He ends up carrying 20 times for 167 yards. So nice performance for him. I don't know. It's certainly not the kind of offense that we saw in the first half of the season, but at the same time, they were better than they were the last couple of weeks. But also, this is what happens when you play the Cardinals. You have a chance to get right.
This should not be happening with this Cardinals defense. We've talked about that. It's not a bad defense. We worried about their depth early in the season. That really has not become a huge issue. It has a little bit at cornerback, number two corner, but that's been an issue and a bad position for them for several years now, even when they were in the NFC Championship a few years ago. They've got edge rushers. They have strong interior defensive linemen. They're athletic at linebacker. They are versatile and experienced at safety. I do think Antoine Bethea is probably washed up a little bit. But so it's a defense with a few holes, but it's not a defense that should be getting embarrassed like this. And when your opponent, division rival, comes into your building and runs 41 times for 269 yards, that's embarrassing.
Especially when they do it with a guy who they just brought in off the street.
Yes.
Larry Fitzgerald threw a touchdown pass in this one, by the way. Fitzgerald to David Johnson. So a little bit of creativity for the Cardinals here offensively. But this was a 31-9 win for the Rams. So not a whole lot good to say about the Cardinals. And all signs point to it being one and done for Steve Wilks. And it's hard to make an argument otherwise that he should stick around, because this thing has been it started bad and it's just unraveling even more than it was before.
Well, and what's painful is that I think if Bruce Arians had retired a year earlier or been out a year earlier, I think Sean McVay. I think he was on their list in Arizona to be their head coach. I know GM Steve Keim liked him quite a bit, so I'm sure to watch McVay come into this building and then humiliate Steve Wilks, their first year head coach, that does not help at all. There's going to be some heavy hearts in Arizona watching that.
Yeah, yeah. What an absurd year for the Cardinals. Patriots, Bills, New England Patriots. Everyone in New England can rest easy. The Patriots have clinched the AFC East. And another really close battle there in that division. 24-12 in this one. Buffalo actually got a very late touchdown to make it a two possession game. But yeah, this was a whole lot of running, heavy dose of Sony Michel. Patriots got a lead and they end up running 47 times for 273, and that's how they did. They weren't really threatened by this Bills offense in this one.
I would love to hear what you and I had this argument when we kind of it got obfuscated in this San Antonio Spurs theory where the Spurs will just sit some guys and kind of concede the game. And I accuse you of saying the Patriots do that, and you're saying, no, it's a little bit more nuanced than that. I think the Patriots do what they have to do to beat the opponent that week. Clearly, New England felt that they didn't have to put up a lot through the air to beat Buffalo. And I would love to have an honest a fly on the wall for when that conversation took place between Bill Belichick and his staff of here's what our approach will be and here's why, because it's really interesting that they would take the air out of the ball like this. Buffalo's not a bad run defense. Buffalo's an inconsistent run defense. It's a streaky one. Remember what Jacksonville did to them a few weeks ago before Leonard Fournette punched his way out of the game against Shaq Lawson?
Yep.
So it is a Bills defense. I understand why you'd want to run, and Matt Milano's been out, although I do think that Lorenzo Alexander looked great last week filling in for him at linebacker. Whatever. That's the defense. This is about the Bills' offense, though. And New England wasn't threatened by Buffalo's offense and Josh Allen. And I just find it fascinating that a team that has Tom Brady would elect to run the ball 47 times. They got 273 yards, so it was sustainable. But they ran the ball 47 times. They dropped back, 25 times, it looks like, with Brady. That's amazing to me.
I think it really was extreme game flow in this one, which is Bills went 3-and-out on their first three drives. Let's see, missed field goal, then another 3-and-out, then an interception on the first play of the next drive. Then they had a bit of a drive, but turned it over on downs, and I think there was just no semblance of a threat of points on the other side of the field.
So you don't think it was the plan to do that?
I think it was a plan to maybe skew run heavier than usual for the Patriots. But, again, I mean, it looked by the end of the first half like the Bills might never score another point.
Well, Patriots only got 7 points out of those 3-and-outs to start the game, though.
Yeah.
And then they did, and then they got the touchdown from James White, so now they're up 14 midway through the second quarter, and I guess maybe that's where your game flow kicks in. I don't know.
I mean, look, Josh Gordon obviously is not available to them anymore, so you have a bit of a transition in the passing game anyway.
But wouldn't you want to, I don't know, then
break
it gets
some
into
of those guys in?
Yeah, and that now gets into the discussion. Do you treat your games
like a preseason game?
Yeah. That might seem on the surface like, oh, of course, no, you don't do that. Adam Gase told me when they were in Denver, they had Peyton Manning for those years. They would treat some of their games as practice time because that was the best time to get reps for certain guys and try certain things. Remember, there was a game, I think Gase actually regretted this later, but there was a game against the Titans that one year, but I think it's 2013, the year that they went to the Super Bowl and lost the Super Bowl, but they had 99 plays against the Titans, maybe even 100 plays, something like that. And it was partly because they were just getting the reps in, and that happened to be on a short week, which is why they kind of regretted doing that. They had a Thursday game following that Titans game, if I'm not mistaken. But the point is, that's a team with Peyton Manning. That's a team with an offensive, innovative coach. And he's saying, yeah, we used practice time and game situations or whatever you want to say. Yeah. We used the games as practice reps. Maybe you do that to get your guys on track without Josh Gordon.
Well, I looked at they're going to be playing in cold weather and in the postseason. Maybe it was the run games practice this week.
Yeah, good point. Maybe this is their Josh Gordon plan. Their post-Josh Gordon plan. They're much more of a run team than we realize. That we've been saying that all year too.
Yeah, I mean they can do it. They can put James Devlin on the field, put Sony Michel behind him, and do some things. The Patriots move up to the 2 seed because the Texans lost in Philly. So the Patriots just need to beat the Jets at home next week to secure that first round bye.
Then the Texans will play, and it wouldn't feel like the playoffs without the Texans getting that Saturday afternoon wild card game at home, right?
I know.
That just feels like the beginning of the playoffs now.
It does. It does. One more here. Vikings, Lions. I'll be curious to hear from you after you watch the tape on this one, Andy. Look, the Vikings, the final score was not particularly close. It ends up being a 27-9 final at Ford Field. The Vikings offensively were terrible in the first half. I mean, they were horrific to start this game, and they ended up salvaging the first half on a Hail Mary. Once again, a Patriots way guy puts a offensive player on the field for a Hail Mary, and they give up a touchdown on it. Kenny Golladay was back there for the Lions, just kind of standing and watching, sort of confused.
But the difference was this time the Hail Mary actually occurred.
Got to the end zone. Yes, that is true.
And remember, the Lions, when they didn't put Calvin Johnson on the field a few years ago, different coaching staff, but they got totally ripped for the Hail Mary, which was as bad as Hail Mary defense gets. But nice try there, Gary, on the connection.
What? they put offensive player who completely misplayed a Hail Mary. Stop putting offensive players in the field.
No. It's not a defensive play. So they wasn't putting an offensive player in the field. It was a jump ball. They put their best jump ball guy out there. Now, I'm sorry he didn't play it as well as you'd like, but Kenny Golladay is their best jump ball player. He wasn't caught in open space having to tackle the team's best runner at the final snap because the Hail Mary was never going to occur. This Hail Mary was on the 44-yard line? That's Hail Mary territory. That's not like that Dolphins-Patriots play. You're stretching here. You're kicking Matt Patricia while he's down.
Look, the defense played well in this one. I mean, we were late in the first half, and the Vikings had four drives and a total of 4 yards. 4 yards on their first four drives in this one. So this was a very slow start, and then they kicked in a little bit and put some points up, just enough points up, because that stripped-down Lions offense just doesn't score very often. Kick some field
goals. I'll be interested to watch this film, like you said, because Mike Zimmer wants to run the ball, and he doesn't have the offensive line to run the ball. And I worry that this Detroit defensive line, which has gotten really stingy since Damon Harrison came aboard, they're giving up less than 80 yards a game on the ground since Harrison's become a full-time player for them. And the big men in Detroit, Devin Kennard, A'shaun Robinson, these are large defensive linemen that they have. That's not a good matchup for Minnesota's interior O-line. So what happens to Zimmer's plan when they get in that situation? And in the first half, they ran the ball 10 times for 22 yards. And Kirk Cousins dropped back, I think it's 13 times, something like that. And as you're saying, they did very little except for the Hail Mary. So the second half, Kevin Stefanski opens up the offense a little bit. And now we're into the philosophical discussion of what does this run the ball thing mean? It was easy last week against Miami. The Dolphins were horrible, embarrassing in run defense. But they ran into a good run defense today, and the plan had to be altered on the fly. Now we see what the plan will be next week. Who do they have? The Bears next week, right? And the Bears will have something to play for. So we're going to learn a lot about this Vikings team because the Bears' run defense is much better than the Vikings' run offense.
And just to say something nice about the Lions before we move on, because you feel I've besmirched the good name of Matt Patricia, when you mentioned the 80 yards per game that they've given up since Damon Harrison came in, you know, a lot of times you might look at a team and say, oh, well, you know, they they were up in all those games. They went 6-2 during this stretch. These are games where the Lions are mostly trailing. They're not playing very well offensively. So yeah, teams are trying to run the ball on them, and the Lions are not giving up yardage. So it's nice for them. Lightning-ish round. Let's do it, Andy. Let's start with the Browns and the Bengals. Bengals had no Tyler Boyd in this one, so even more shorthanded. They kind of, I don't know, they came somewhat close. The Browns did have to close them out late in this game. But another win for the Browns, who they were eliminated from playoff contention today, but certainly a promising finish to the season. And the only thing I'll say about this, and I don't know if you have anything to add, but Baker Mayfield had like another, he was staring down Hugh Jackson on the sideline type of thing. It's got to end. Baker Mayfield has to find a better arch nemesis than Hugh Jackson, who is just not relevant to the league anymore. He has to, you know, whoever his Joker is going to be to his Batman, it can't be Hugh Jackson.
And I am the type that says, why does it have to be anybody? I don't see that as leadership. But look, a lot of what the Browns are doing is working, and I'm a big Baker Mayfield guy for how he plays. And so I'm willing to sit and see if, all right, maybe he's the horse of a different color here, and we'll see how it goes. I don't love that, though. I mean, can you ever in a million years imagine Andrew Luck, Tom Brady, Phillip Rivers, Drew Brees, Ben Roethlisberger, I mean, any of those QBs doing that to a former coach or anybody on the sideline?
It's a weird obsession.
On the sideline is what's different. Brady will get in a guy's face on the field. Remember, who was the guy for the Steelers years ago that trash-talked as a young defensive back? Anthony Smith, Syracuse's own. Yeah, there you go. I knew you'd know. And Brady got right. They scored a touchdown on him. Brady got right up in his face.
Yep.
They went after him because he'd been talking. That's competitive football, though. Staring down your fired coach on the other team's sideline or anybody on the sideline, you know, that's. I just can't imagine another quarterback doing that.
Maybe he just doesn't realize that Hugh Jackson did not have another job offer coming. Like Hugh Jackson was not like picking and choosing his next destination. This might be it for him.
Even if he was, Jackson's grand plan was not, hey, how can I get fired from the Browns job so I can become a middling assistant for the Bengals? That's nobody's plan. That wasn't his plan.
Oh, man. Oh, this was, I mean, look, Browns are going well. This, I mean, whatever. Klemko wrote that whole series on Baker last year, and this is the kind of stuff that fuels Baker. He wants to be slighted. He wants to have his enemies list and all that stuff, and yeah,
which we ought to have Klemko on, because of all the, if somebody came to me and described a person like that and said, hey, can you tell us what's inside that man, what they're thinking, I would say, I don't know, but I know someone who might. Robert Klemko would be able to explain the logic behind that, because Klemko and the whole chip on the shoulder thing, he gets it. He understands it. I don't. That's what makes us good friends and also sometimes the worst of enemies, which is much to the amusement of the MMQB staff, I know.
He is your Hugh Jackson. Wait, no, you are his Hugh Jackson. We'll go that way.
I'm
he's
probably
Baker
his
and you're Hugh.
Well, whatever. He is exceedingly easygoing, and I am exceedingly uptight. That's when we're getting to our patterns. Let's be honest.
It's the original odd couple. Packers, Jets. Packers win this one in overtime. Look, it was Packers obviously have nothing to play for. It was nice to see them put together a big offensive performance and Aaron Rodgers come back in a game, and they end up rallying from a deficit here. And I really thought this game was just going to be a whole lot of like Jamal Williams and Elijah McGuire carries, and both teams were just going to move on with their lives. But I don't know, it ended up getting a little bit wild, a little bit fun. Sam Darnold played well again. He's got Robbie Anderson. It was a neat game.
I didn't see a lot of this one, but I'm looking at his numbers, and I'll certainly watch the film because I want to watch these rookie QBs as they get these. This is a time of year to really evaluate a rookie QB. And Darnold, 24 out of 35, 341 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. Very nice game for him. And then Rodgers had some very Rodgers-like numbers, and this will be good film.
It was especially good because it really did feel like Aaron Rodgers was going to sleepwalk through another game early on in this one, and they were just going to get embarrassed in East Rutherford, but they end up rallying and getting the win here. And I will say one thing, Andy. I don't know if I'd play Aaron Rodgers because I don't know how healthy that knee is, and obviously he's going to have a new head coach next year. It's probably not going to be Joe Philbin. There might be something to say for putting him out there. We know he's, no matter who his next coach is and what they try and do, the out-of-structure stuff will be part of who he is. So putting him out there with Valdez-Scantling and with St. Brown, and maybe you build up a little more chemistry as far as that goes. But hey, it worked today. It was a nice win in a really sad season for the Packers.
I'm always for playing guys because I think the best way to build a team and develop a team is to win. I don't think this whole draft positioning and drafts, I think that's rubbish. In this case, though, when they're trading the head coach and they're going to have a whole new staff and a whole new operation next year, I don't think risking the franchise QB who's been less than 100% all year is remotely worth it. I think you just do say, hey, this one's it's a lost season. That's why we're having a new coach coming in. We'll go get him next year. I don't normally go that way, but I wouldn't have Rodgers out there.
In a game that looked really good when the schedule came out, but ended up being a not very good game. Falcons beat the Panthers in Carolina 24-10. No Cam Newton this one. Taylor Heinicke, nice story. He threw a touchdown early, and that was good. Ended up not having a very good game, threw three picks. More breaks in that secondary for the Panthers, giving up too many yards here. But I don't know, not a whole lot to say about this game.
No, real quick then, theoretically, because I've thought, remember I said I Zach Ertz might just be my right-end guy on tight end. Luke Kuechly has had a linebacker spot solidified on my all-pro vote for about 2 months now. Do I have to reevaluate that, given even though it's not his fault per se, can you blindly put the best linebacker on the league and the all-pro team if he's playing for a defense that has been very subpar and has lost its season down the stretch?
As I was watching Sunday Night Football, I was actually thinking ahead to when we do our position ranking show this summer and when we do the linebacker show. Will Bobby Wagner, is this the year he leapfrogs Luke Kuechly?
I don't know. Kuechly has not been less than his usual self this year. It just hasn't been enough.
Yeah. Bobby Wagner has been really good, though. I think Wagner has had his best year.
And it feels like, kind of feels like he's elevated the guys around him a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah. That too. I feel like when I used to watch Bobby Wagner, there was a part of you that kind of said, boy, he's really good, but you know, you can play with a certain amount of freedom when you got Chancellor and Thomas behind you and Richard Sherman out there at corner. And, he's doing it with a bunch of young guys this year.
No, he's absolutely all-pro worthy. There's actually three linebacker spots on there, which drives me nuts. I wish there were only two linebacker spots, but there are three. So there's room for both of these guys plus one more player. But if it's head-to-head Wagner or Kuechly, I think you have to go Wagner. But with both of them, do you just say, hey, they're both in and move along? Or is there a third and fourth? Who are the other linebackers that deserve consideration, I guess, is what we're saying. It's not these rookies that have played. I don't know, Darius Leonard maybe for the Colts? Maybe he does actually deserve consideration for all pro. He's worth considering.
He's been
I'm
good.
Look at him.
Nah.
He's been a little more than good. They ask a lot of their linebackers in that scheme, because they slant their defensive linemen so much. They don't have very good they don't have very athletic D linemen in Indianapolis. They got a lot of big guys.
Would you go with Leonard or one of the Cowboys? Or I guess the only Cowboy would be Jalen Smith at this point. Probably the other guys don't have.
Yeah, because Vander Esch hasn't been on the field. I might go Jalen Smith just out of respect for what he's done and as almost a tacit apology for the way he's been treated on this show, trying to come off of a big, horrendous, life-altering knee injury and getting written off before he enters his third season when he was going to bounce back and be strong. You know, I feel so terrible that he would be discarded like that. Even though I wasn't the one doing it, I'm a little bit responsible, you know, because I'm your partner.
At most, I only said three times that I could beat Jalen Smith in a fist fight. Now, I don't know. Maybe it would just be a draw. I hope to never find out. Jaguars, Dolphins, Andy. Dolphins go down, go out with a whimper in this one. I don't know what to. If Adam Gase is staying on, he needs a quarterback he can that he trusts. I mean, this is way too conservative with what they're doing with Ryan Tannehill in a game that they had to have. Jaguars defense plays well in this one, and they finally, mercifully, after my month of begging, just took Cody Kessler out of the game. It just wasn't working.
Gase has gotten a little bit, in the last few weeks, he'd gotten a little bit more aggressive, and it had not worked out for them. And so now they're back to being a little bit conservative here. I do think some adjustments. I look at that defense more in Miami, though, and it's been so inconsistent. I know D coordinator Matt Burke is saying we're not drawing up unsound schemes. And I understand what he's saying when he says that. I don't love that coming from a coach, though. I'm a bigger fan of the Sean McVay approach, which is I got to be better. I got to put him in better positions, no matter what they're saying. Whatever it is, there's a lack of continuity on the defense, and there's two parts to a defense. There's the scheme, which we can all see and evaluate, but nobody's drawing up bad schemes in the NFL for the 99% of the most part. So there's that part, and then there's teaching the scheme, and how is it being taught to you? And that's where it's hard to evaluate coaches, and that's what we don't know. But Miami this year has not been very consistent playing their scheme for whatever reason.
Let's go back to Saturday night. Two more games. Saturday night games here. Ravens Chargers. Eric Weddle versus Philip Rivers. Eric Weddle wins. This was a smothering performance by this Ravens defense. They gave up one short field touchdown and a field goal, and that was it. And Chargers, who could have, with the Chiefs' loss tonight, they could have moved to the number one seed in the AFC. Instead, they sit back in a wild card spot. Ravens, meanwhile, are now leading the AFC North. They beat the Browns at home next week. They are AFC North champions.
And there will be that playoff team that nobody wants to face. That's going to be the one. And they'll probably wind up playing the Colts somehow. So we're going to have the two teams that nobody wants to face facing each other. And that'll be the story. But this Lamar Jackson thing, and it was nice to see him expand their passing stuff a little bit. They had a big play there. He's 12 of 22 throwing the ball. He wasn't quite as dependent on the run. We're talking him in and of himself. It was nice to see them win a game that way. They've got to go get it done. Now, remember last year, they were in position in Week 17 controlling their own fate, and they blew it at Cincinnati, or against Cincinnati, or at home.
Home against Cincinnati.
Yeah. So don't just take this Browns game for granted at all. And what would really be interesting is, let's say if they blow it again that way, they just announced that John Harbaugh would be back.
Yeah.
You know?
That would be awkward.
Be a weird spot.
I was honestly hoping that would be the Sunday night flex game. Because look, we wondered last year, you know, Bengals were playing on the string. Everyone thought Marvin Lewis was a lame duck coach. Would the Bengals even show up for that game in Baltimore? And they did, and they won, and that's how it went down. There's no doubt that the Browns are going to want to win this game and spoil the Ravens season and sort of kickstart a little rivalry here in this division.
No question.
That's going to be a really good game.
That would have been a fun Sunday night game, but we can still watch it. What, is that a late window game, I'm guessing, on next Sunday?
No, I think they're still going off.
That's got to be a late
window game. Sorry, they do have the late window, 4:25. So, yeah, along with the Eagles. That'll be a fun late afternoon set there. And the other Saturday game, this was Marcus Mariota goes down with the elbow injury. Blaine Gabbert comes on. Just downright disrespectful. I'm sorry to Blaine Gabbert, but he ends up leading the Titans past the Josh Johnson Redskins in what was, not great football in this one. I was actually pretty impressed by what the Redskins were doing offensively in this one, especially a couple times when they really fell behind the chains facing second and 20-something or third and longs, and they sort of kept some drives going and put up more points on the board than really this team should be putting up at this point, which is 16. I mean, that's a big number when a street free agent is your quarterback and you're playing with a hobbled offensive line, and a street free agent is your running back. Adrian Peterson was a guy who no one wanted. Jay Gruden did a nice job this year.
Well, for Tennessee, it feels like they're kind of finding their identity now a little bit. On offense, you got some screen designs that they get to every week. They've turned to Derrick Henry, which really surprises me, but I understand why they have, and it's working well for him, and they're designing ways to get him the ball with some momentum built in early in his runs, which is what he needs. And then defensively, we'll see how the Logan Ryan injury plays out. This game wasn't one to prove it, but we'll find out against Indianapolis next week how different of a defense they are with that. But if they can survive that, it's a defense that plays aggressive and comes downhill and comes after you and has gotten better over the course of this season. So a nice year for the – I know they were – or the Chargers, nice year for the Titans. I know they were a playoff team last year. But I think to some extent, I think they've overachieved this season.
I thought so too. I really thought with all the injuries they had this summer, this was a team, you know, new regime coming in, basically missing all that summer work. I thought they were going to start slow. I thought this would be something of a lost season. I mean, let's face it, they weren't exactly a I don't want to say they weren't a legitimate playoff team. They won the games last year, but it wasn't the most impressive regular season run anyone's ever had here. So I thought they'd slide back into the 7-9, 8-8 range. Instead, they're sitting in 9-6 with a chance to win next week at home against the Colts. If they win that game, they are in the playoffs. And we should mention, not only there's Logan Ryan, we'll see what happens with Mariota and the elbow this week, but Jarrell Casey suffered a knee injury on Saturday, and we'll see if they have him going forward. That looked like a pretty serious injury, but banged up. War of attrition in this league. Andy, thing of the week.
My thing of the week is, and maybe I've said this, but I'm saying it again, I love those Christmas graphics that they do on the when they show the score, they come back from commercial, whatever it is. I think Monday Night Football, the ESPN guys, they've got the best ones where it's the Christmas sweaters surrounded, like the logos look like Christmas sweaters, stitching, and then they're surrounded by Christmas lights. And what I love is that they brought it out a few weeks ago. They don't just wait till right up to the few nights before Christmas. They've been doing it for much of December. The best I've ever seen still years ago, and I was only for a short time, Fox, when a team picked up a first down. I remember it was in a Redskins-Niners game. It was LeVar Arrington era, so I was in high school.
Wow, yeah.
When a team picked up a first down, to show the new down and distance changing over, they had a little train come by, a little choo-choo train come across the top of the Fox box score to reset the down and distance. And I thought that is that's attention to detail. That's why we watch. And I would love to see more interactive graphics rather than these static graphics. But I love the sweaters on the Monday Night Football graphics.
Are you a sweater guy, by the way? Are you a sweater wearer?
I am. I am, but mainly because I like warm long sleeve. I've got some that are unencumbering. As long as I can move freely, all my clothes are spandex now. Almost everything I wear is spandex or something you wear to the gym if nobody's looking at me. So yeah. As long as I can move freely in the sweater, and I've got two right now that I can. We had this conversation last year because we both showed up with black sweaters to the holiday party, remember?
We did. Well, I'm talking like Christmas sweaters though, Andy.
Oh, no, not at all. Nope, all my sweaters are just plain black.
Yeah,
I like Christmas. I just don't – I'm not one of – I don't broadcast my personality very well.
All right.
Maybe it's because I don't have, you know
– Well, you have the same personality as me. That's why we dress alike all the time.
Yeah.
I have a very negative thing of the week, so I feel bad ending it like this, and I'll try to twist
one.
It positive. Yes, after the Christmas one. I should have gone first, and you could have gone second and saved Christmas. Instead, I'm about to ruin Christmas for everyone. I was a little bit concerned as I watched games today, and perhaps the Sunday night game in particular, that there's a bit of flopping going on, I feel like, among pass catchers in the NFL. And it's one thing to, you know, the ball is clearly out of reach and now you're going to flail and try and draw a flag, and that's fine. I think there are plays that can be made that players are not making and instead looking to draw a flag.
That's not
and it worries
horribly
me.
Negative. That doesn't kill Christmas if that's what you're worried about.
It feels picky. It feels negative. It felt like a negative day. Lots of negativity. I was really on
That's
the officiating.
Festivus. It's a Festivus kind of comment at the end of the
it
show.
It is.
Then.
It is an airing of grievances. But yeah, I'm a little bit worried. Look, it's obviously it's the worst thing about watching basketball. It's the worst thing about watching soccer. I hope there is not going to be an epidemic of flopping in the NFL, because Lord knows we don't need that, and we certainly don't need more flags in these games.
Fair enough. Good.
Say something Christmassy, Andy.
Something Christmassy? Well, somebody who's in the other room listening to me just texted and said choo-choo's not a type of train, and I need to grow up for saying choo-choo train.
I thought we were in a soundproof booth.
This is embarrassing.
I've been down to
the
rail
other day
yard.
I referred to it as a choo-choo train kind of casual, and I got mocked for that as well. But it was it made a little sound when it went across the screen.
That's did it make a sound when it went across
it made
the screen?
A subtle little sound, yeah.
I'll just say, even like Thomas the Tank Engine, they don't call them choo-choo trains. Child train enthusiasts don't call them choo-choo trains. I was going to let it go, though.
Did you notice it when I said it?
No, I kind of liked it because it was a good descriptor.
All right, well, good.
There you go.
Shelby Royston, our producer, just sent a really horribly mean text saying I didn't know his dogs could text.
That's not only a slight at you, it's a slight at your dogs. You think I can't teach my dogs to text? We're searching for the Christmas spirit, and I think we just missed out on it. I think that's going to be it. We ruined Christmas this year. We'll try better for Christmas 2019. Deal?
Deal.
Okay. That's going to be a wrap. Thanks to researchers Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor. They make us sound smart every week. They're so helpful. Thank you to our producer, Shelby Royston, the guys at Canes 13 who always make us sound good. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Like I said earlier, we will be back with the regular Deep Dive Show on Thursday. No changes to the schedule this week. We'll have the mini mailbag. Send those questions. Talk back at themmqb.com or find us on Twitter or Facebook. To get our shows, as well as the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, normally featuring Jenny Brentz and Connor Orr, although they're off this week, plus the MMQB Gambling Podcast, hosted by myself, Jimmy Traina, and Scott Gramling. Just subscribe to the MMQB NFL Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, radio.com/10things, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. Have a great Christmas. We'll see you on Thursday.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.